This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of Troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The Torqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees, but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the Troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
What is one of the most dangerous things you can do when you get seriously ill? Go to the hospital. talk about catch 22. You're sick and you're told by your doctor to go to the hospital, but no one tells you the deadly little secret of today's hospitals. They kill. They kill because they have inadequate infection control practices. Patients going in for a particular problem often acquire infections from the hospital itself, often causing death. Lots of deaths. The Center for Disease Control reports that nearly 90,000 Americans a year die from these hospital infections. That's more than die from auto accidents and homicides combined. About 2 million patients a year catch infections from their hospitals, one of every 20 people who go in. What could be done? A huge step forward would be the simplest one. Handling. Infections could be cut by more than half if there was an effective program for all medical personnel to wash their hands regularly, especially washing with alcohol hand rubs. Yet, hospitals, apparently watching their bottom lines, don't have such a system in place, and none are required to put it in place. On the other hand, some hospitals do an excellent job of preventing infections. How are you to know the good from the bad? You can't. Believe it or not, there's no requirement that hospitals report or publicly disclose their infection rates so we patients can decide which is the best place for us. Luckily, some states are pushing mandatory disclosure laws. Unluckily, hospital lobbyists are pushing a bill in Congress that would preempt the ability of states to require this disclosure, instead setting up a voluntary federal program for reporting infection rates, and even these voluntary reports would be kept from the public. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is stupid. Consumers Union is fighting for full disclosure. Join them at StopHospitalInfections.org.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, welcome back, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Live, Tom Hartman here, coast to coast. It's Monday morning. The rain has returned here to the People's Republic of Vermont. Plants are springing up. Actually, flowers. It's just a few weeks ago we lost the last of our snow. Lots to talk about today. In the bottom of this hour, at 30 minutes after, we're going to have Greg Palestine. He's got some new information. You know, he's the guy who documented the roughly 90,000 mostly African-American votes in Florida that Catherine Harris purged from the voter list, ensuring both the George W. and Jeb were able to win the 2000 election, and then kept them off for the 2002 election, giving Jeb the margin of error there. Well, he's discovered a million votes nationwide that have been stolen. That should be an interesting discussion. You know, I present this program as uncommon sense from the radical middle. People say, well, does that mean that you're kind of going to the center like Kerry? No. I just, you know, and that's not to say that Kerry is necessarily going to the center, although, yeah, I think he is. And I think George Bush will too. They're both gonna do that. It just happens in politics, political elections. But for me, the concept of the radical middle is the idea that we, the people, don't want either governments or corporations running our lives. We don't want a corporate state, and we don't want a police state. We want back our democratic institutions. We want a government once again. Finally, after, you know, at least 20-some-odd years, that is responsive to we the people instead of captive to corporate special interests. This is, you know, just very straightforward stuff. We want our lives in peace and security. We're not willing to tolerate tyranny or subject ourselves to a police state. We want job security and safety in our old age. It's not an unreasonable request. And we've clearly seen all around the world, and it's certainly across America, the transnational corporations do not give a hoot about this. This is not on their agenda. We want a clean environment. We want schools that inspire and fill our children with a thirst for knowledge. And we realize that the modern corporate-controlled state has let profit be more important than clean air, drinkable water, providing our children with a decent education, maintaining the commons in a way that works. Yes, there is much to be said for profit. As those of you who regularly listen to the program know, I am all in favor of people having the right to incorporate and corporations doing business in America. I think it's wonderful. Small business, entrepreneurial ventures, medium-sized businesses, local businesses are what built this country and made it great. And just like when cells divide in your body, it keeps you alive and keeps you going, so we need the cellular division, the continuous growth of small businesses in America. But when cells divide out of control in the body and start overwhelming other organs, other systems in the body, and stealing nourishment from them, and essentially competing unfairly against that, it's called cancer. And in order to prevent that kind of cancer in the United States, when it started rising its ugly head after the Civil War, largely as a consequence of the war, because Lincoln during the Civil War had to set aside so many of the laws that the founders had put in place and the various states had put in place back in the 1770s and 1780s to prevent this sort of thing, Lincoln, to prevent corporations from rising. And back then, you know, from 1770 up until the Civil War, a corporation could not exist more than 40 years. At the end of 40 years, it had to be dissolved. It was illegal for a corporation to own stock in another corporation. A corporation could only do one thing. A newspaper or any other outlet, back then it was mostly newspapers, could be owned by a corporation, but only if all of the directors and stockholders were local. This was the law in the United States. And after the Civil War, Lincoln had to set aside a lot of these laws in order to let corporations get big enough to provide him with, very rapidly, to provide him with war material. And he lamented that. I mean, there's no shortage of quotations from Lincoln about his concern about this. You want to really get a good insight into this, read Carl Sandburg's biography of Lincoln, written 50 years ago. Brilliant. And after Lincoln's assassination, and he intended to roll these things back, but he was assassinated, never got a chance to do it. And after his assassination, the corporations rose up from the railroads to the beginning of the Standard Oil Trust, and started to seize control of government. And we the people said, no, we don't want that. And in December of 1881, December 1st, Senator Sherman of Ohio introduced Senate Bill No. 1, the Sherman Antitrust Act, and said, let's go back to the way it was. Let's make it a felony, punishable by imprisonment, for people to conspire to form monopolies among corporations. And it's still on the books. But Ronald Reagan said, you know, we're not going to enforce that, which led to this mergers and acquisition frenzy I mean, Jimmy Carter was the last one to enforce that. He broke up AT&T, and breaking up AT&T actually enhanced shareholder value. If you owned stock in AT&T before Carter broke it up, then you ended up with stock in a whole bunch of different baby bells, and the value of your investment went up. Huge consolidation for corporations is not healthy for the economy. It's not healthy for the stockholders. It's only healthy for the CEOs, because then they can make a $400 million salary instead of a $4 million salary. So the radical middle says, you know, we don't want a fascistic government, and we don't want fascistic corporations. We would like to return to the principles upon which this country was founded. Just very straightforward. We don't want the government telling us what doctors we can see, although we would like to collectively pay for it. Let's have a collective insurance policy so that the costs go down for all of us. And we don't want corporations telling us what doctors we can see, like we have now with HMOs and PPOs. We don't want to pay excessive taxes, but we're also willing to pay our share for the upkeep of the nation. Safe streets and communities, our nation's defense. We also think that somebody who only spends 1% of their income on food and shelter, when compared to somebody who pays half of their income on food and shelter, is deriving more of the blessings of the society and therefore has an obligation to pay more in taxes for it. James Madison defined that in 1792 when he said that the government's role in promoting an American middle class, quote, by the silent operations of the law, which without violating the rights of property, reduce extreme wealth toward a state of mediocrity and raise extreme indigence toward a state of comfort, end quote. To say that somebody who earns millions by arbitrage works all that much harder than a middle class wage earner is simply nonsense. Yet you got multi-millionaire right-wing talk show hosts all across America. They actually have, you know, people driving down the street in their pickup trucks nodding their heads going, yep, we need more tax cuts for those millionaires. Yep, sure enough. I don't mean to parody or lampoon the people who listen to Rush. They're, in many cases, they're the same people who listen to me. And, I honor all of us, but it just is astounding to me how effective this has been. So now we see Alan Greenspan rolling up his sleeves. And this is the thing that I find particularly interesting. There's a guy who wrote a book, Stanford University Press published. It's called Predicting Presidential Elections and Other Things. His name is Fair. Let's see if I can find it. Ray Fair. He's a professor of economics at Yale. And he came up with a model for predicting who's going to win an election, and applied it retrospectively all the way back to 1916, 22 presidential elections, and he got every single one right, with two exceptions, and they both involved George Bush's. The first was George H.W. Bush. He hadn't anticipated that the Iranians would hold the hostages and wipe out Jimmy Carter's popularity in the 2 months before the election, which is exactly what happened. And, of course, we then paid off those, you know, there was a deal that was cut before the election by George Bush. And then after the election, that was the Reagan election. After the election with Reagan, you know, we paid them off. That was the Iran-Contra scandal. We gave them weapons for the hostages. But anyhow, he didn't predict the first Bush election, and he didn't predict the second one, although he did actually predict the popular vote. So there's some accuracy here. And he's suggesting that there's a 58.7% that George Bush is going to win with a 58.7% margin. And the reason why is economics. His whole model is based on looking at economics. You can see it at fairmodel.econ.yale.edu. And so here we have in today's paper, this is just fascinating, an article in the Associated Press by Martin Krutzinger, a replay of 1994. Now think back to 1994. It was the second year of the Clinton presidency. And in February of 1994, February 4th, 1994, Alan Greenspan comes in. This is 9-10 months before the elections, and starts cranking up interest rates. And he does it six times between February and November, throwing the economy into the toilet. Totally tanked it. He raised it 6 points. Or 2.6%, excuse me, up to 6%. He raised it six times, and he raised it seven times, and it went up to 6%. It wiped out Orange County. Remember that? Orange County went bankrupt. Wiped out the Mexican peso. Wiped out Kidder Peabody and other Wall Street firms. And the result of that, this was a mid-year election, the result of that was that the Republicans took the House and the Senate for the first time in many, many years, several decades, which led to the Gingrich Revolution, as it were. As now the National Organization of Women points out, the new so-called leaders are a rogues gallery of anti-women men. Henry Hyde, who now chairs the powerful House Judiciary Committee, and Senator Jesse Helms now chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and on it went. Well, now Greenspan says he's not going to make the mistake of 94. In other words, he stuck it to Bill Clinton and the Democrats. And it's clear he has to raise interest rates, but he's going to do it gently this time. He's going to do it so that the impact falls after the election. And he's coming right out and saying this. This is, of course, Greenspan is a right-wing ideologue. Right there in the camp with George Bush. 20 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs is very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush, art. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Well, he started into dealing with slaves and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it all came crashing down, I became withdrawn.
And welcome back.
The only thing I knew how to do was keep on keeping on.
Yeah, we need to keep on keeping on here. Thank you, Bob. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. A replay of 1994? Probably not. Alan Greenspan is going to do everything he can to make sure that George W. Bush gets reelected. And it, really, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the incredible hit in terms of stimulus that this economy took between borrowing. And see, this is the main thing that promotes inflation, is borrowing trillions of dollars from our children and grandchildren and handing it to the wealthiest in America, cranking up the national debt just massively. Well, that creates competition. I mean, the government has to compete in the marketplace for people to loan it money. And that always leads to an increase in interest rates, as it did during the Vietnam War. I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter inherited the tail end of that. Lyndon Johnson thought he could have guns and butter. Didn't work. And it came back to haunt us. And then Reagan, the same thing. You know, Reagan says, oh, you know, we can borrow all this money. Of course, Reagan had this huge tax cut and huge borrowing in the first year, and then he raised taxes every year for the next 6 years. And George H.W. Bush had to raise taxes, but they never got back to where the government was actually paying its own way. So anyhow, we had this huge, you know, so-called tax break, this huge transfer of wealth from our children to the wealthiest campaign donors to the Bush campaign, and that combined with the incredible amount of spending on the war. I mean, imagine if the city that you live in were to get $1 billion or even $500 million. I mean, the 200 largest cities in America, when you count the 200 largest cities in America, you're getting down to some pretty small towns. Relatively speaking, I don't have the list in front of me, but you're getting down to towns that just have a few hundred thousand people in them by the time you get down to number 200. And if every one of those communities in America received $1 billion from the federal government, can you imagine the kind of, you know, we could rebuild our schools, we could create infrastructure for small businesses. We could put out loans for small businesses. We could pay for college educations for our kids. We could make our healthcare system. I mean, it's just mind-boggling what could be done if your town and mine got $1 billion. And yet that $200 billion instead got spent in Iraq. Now, the reality is a lot of that money is now coming back into the United States because it was being given to American contractors. And the weapons, of course, are being bought from American defense industry companies. And it's heating up the economy. So between the war in Iraq, wars are always stimulative. Between the war in Iraq and this incredible borrowing to pay off Bush's campaign donors, you've got this upward pressure on interest rates. And Greenspan really a year ago should have started raising interest rates, but he was not, in my opinion, willing to do it then. because it would have produced the result of 94, which took from the Democrats control of the House and the Senate. The incumbent party always gets hurt when the economy goes south. And the Republicans now have control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and Greenspan is doing everything he can to postpone the pain from this thing until after the election. And heaven help whoever gets elected, because it's going to be a real challenge here in the United States in December of 2004 and January of 2005. We have set up a real mess. I mean, a real mess. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour, exposing the con in conservatives. Stick around, we got Greg Palast coming up. Going to learn about where those million votes went in the last two elections.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of Troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The Torqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the Troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
White parents whose worst fear is a child with dyed hair and who like staring. Like whatever they say has no bearing. It's so scary in a house that allows no swearing to see him walking.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you 26 minutes before the hour. It's Greg Palast is with us. Greg, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hey, what can I tell you?
Hey.
What's on your mind, Tom?
Hey, Greg. Greg's writings have appeared in the Washington Post, Harper's, and The Nation. He's been a guest on the new Progressive Talk Radio Network, Air America, Dennis Miller Show, O'Reilly Factor Politically. The list just goes on and on and on. I just consider you one of the finest reporters and writers. The quality of your writing is so readable.
What have I written?
I had the best democracy money. Thank you. A good cue. The best democracy money can buy in a bookstore near you. New York Times bestseller. And Greg,
it's out in the new expand this week. I'm not kidding about this. Out in the new expanded election edition this week. The best democracy money can buy. It's the new expanded election edition, and you should get it because this is going to be the last election, so it'll be a collector's item.
Yeah, even if you've read the old, there you go. Even if you've read the earlier version, it's worth going out and getting the new one. Greg, vanishing vote story here, I thought was fascinating. You say the purge is back. Okay, as far as I knew, one of the reasons why Jeb Bush won the Florida governorship in 2002 was because the purge was still in place, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the purge. So for those who don't know, the purge.
Yeah.
If you ain't through the purge, I thought purge is like like diuretics or something like that. You know, you had to go see the doctor the next day. Purge. I never heard purge before in elections until I ran into Katie Harris. And 5 months before,
who's a little bit like a diuretic or an emetic, I think actually is the word. Yeah.
It's
By the way, if our listeners want to call in or have a question for Greg, our number is 1-866-889-8894. Pardon me, I needed to get that in.
No,
go ahead.
That's good. The 5 months before the election, 2000, Catherine Harris, Jeb Bush, marked 57,000 voters for elimination from the voter rolls. Finishing off with like 90-some thousand. Why are they removing voters? They said they were criminals who can't vote in Florida, ex-cons. Almost every single person on the list, when I say almost every single person, at least 97% of these people were innocent of any crime, but the majority of were guilty of voting while black. And we're not guessing about whether these are black people. The name black is right next to their names on the registration forms.
So the list actually
doesn't mean that they counted your vote. 180,000 votes were not counted in Florida. 180,000 were never counted, thrown in the dumpster.
These, the so-called spoiled votes.
Spoiled. And you don't spoil a vote by leaving it out of the fridge. It's spoiled because there's a stray mark. By the way, you know what they call a stray mark? People wrote in Al Gore, circled Al Gore's name. That was a stray mark.
Yeah. Now, didn't the laws of Florida require them to use the criteria of the intent of the voter?
Laws of Florida are what the plantation owners say the laws are. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Justice Scalia, who just went on that hunting trip with Dick Cheney. They said they were duck hunting. In fact, they were hunting down runaway slaves.
No doubt.
Or
practicing
laughing
for.
Because otherwise you would cry.
Yeah.
The Florida Supreme Court said, count the votes you threw in the dumpster, Ms. Harris. And she went to her friends at the Supremes, and they said, stop the vote count. Now, here's the ugly part. I was discovering that, in fact, in black counties, you make a mistake on your ballot, they throw it away. That went in the dumpster. You make a mistake in a white county, they gave you another ballot. I took this to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. The commissioners investigated precinct by precinct all through Florida, and they discovered that of 180,000 votes, you have to understand, you got census data that goes down to the street level, to the address, right?
Yeah. Of the 180,000 so-called spoiled votes, not counted.
Yeah, more than half were cast by black folk.
Whoa.
So, by the way, in case you're interested in what that means for democracy, we know that almost all blacks voted for Al Gore.
Right.
The whites and Hispanics split the vote about evenly. Gore won you know, by 80-some thousand votes in Florida, if you counted all the votes that were thrown away.
Now
80,000 votes. Okay.
Yeah, now,
that's the beginning of it.
Yeah, okay, just a second. Half of those 140,000 spoiled votes were...
180,000. The guys with the white sheets tell you, because black voters are too dumb, they don't know how to...
I was just going to say that's what's been implied. That was what was being implied on the right-wing talk shows back then, was, it has to do with the level of education. And,
right. Well, some of the liberal... Yeah, and including Ted Koppel.
Yeah.
This program ran a whole story about how blacks are too stupid to figure out the ballots. And, in fact, the Civil Rights Commission said, okay, well, we'll investigate that. I mean, if it's true, it's true. Nice or not nice. It is complete baloney.
Yeah.
In Gadsden, which is the place with the worst, where most votes are thrown out, that was the place where the optical voting machines were taken out of polling places. So you made a mistake. You know, you didn't know about it until it was your ballot was carted off and then it was tossed. In the white counties, the machines, the optical reading machines, are right in the voting booth. You can't make a mistake because you made a mistake. You wouldn't accept your ballot.
Ah.
Okay? Well, when Gadsden switched to the white machines in the next election, they didn't lose any votes.
Amazing.
So they went from the highest vote loss in the state to the lowest.
Amazing.
By switching the machines. That had nothing to do with education. It had everything to do with switching the machines from Jim Crow boxes to the white system. So then, now Jeb Crow has decided to fix it all by, after Gadsden used the correct machinery, they ordered that removed and replaced now by computers.
Yeah.
Okay, now here's the ugly little thing. According to this, is Phil Klinkner, who's the
Secret Service.
Yeah, Bev Harris being harassed by the Secret Service. This is fascinating. Hey, Greg, can you stick around over the break and answer that on the other side?
Yep.
Okay, hang on. Kim, thanks for the question. Appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Greg Palast, author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate formula. You'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A UN report lists a growing number of marine environments that are running low on oxygen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In many places around the world, coastal ecosystems are in trouble because pollution is robbing the water of oxygen. A recent report from the United Nations provides a list of almost 150 coastal environments that now suffer severe oxygen depletion. Robert Diaz is a marine biologist at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He wrote a study that was the basis for the UN report. He says the scientific name for the problem is hypoxia, and it received publicity for the first time back in the 1970s. That's when scientists started to document oxygen depletion in the Gulf of Mexico every spring. Diaz says once people started to look for hypoxia, they found it all over the place.
So it's really in the 80s when we see the identification of a lot of zones that had been hypoxic. But what we see in the 90s is the identification of new zones, zones that were not hypoxic in the 80s. So unfortunately, I think there is a real trend as an increase in the number of systems that are experiencing hypoxia for the first time.
Hypoxia gets started when water is polluted with excess nutrients, such as fertilizer. The UN says hypoxia could get worse in Asia and South America as farming becomes more dependent on fertilizer. Diaz agrees that it could be a serious problem.
It's in these other countries that up until this point haven't really been large users of fertilizers that we're going to see the biggest changes. And unfortunately, there'll be the worst kind of changes for the marine environment.
The report on hypoxia was part of a yearbook published this spring by the UN Environment Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tide.
You're going to have to keep your eyes wide open all the time if you want to figure out what's going on with these voting machines. Here we've got Greg Palast, the most important investigative reporter of our generation, according to Britain's Tribune magazine. I agree. The author of the best democracy money can buy, an extraordinary book, which is now out in an expanded election edition in bookstores near you. Greg, we were talking. Kim in Denver had asked about Bev Harris. I just got this email from her a few days ago that she's got the Secret Service now coming after her. You want to give our listeners a thumbnail on that? We got about 2.5 minutes here.
Yeah, what's been going on? Bev Harris is a journalist who was able to get inside documents from Diebold. This is a company that is the second largest maker of electronic voting machines, and they have complained about Bev Harris because they said that their machines, that no one can hack into their computers and get a hold of their source code, and they're suing her, that they threatened to sue her because she was able to get inside and get their source code and get their internal documents.
And she did it with a Google search, by the way.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was just incredible.
So you know, exactly. These are the guys that our systems are completely secure, and we're going to threaten anyone who proves that it isn't. So Bev Harris has showed how horrendously easy it is to get into and hack into these machines. And but of course that's assuming that you have to hack into. Let's remember that Diebold is a company which is basically a subsidiary of the Republican Party, and so those guys don't have to hack in. They are in.
Yeah.
And now, by the way, now and so Bev has been constantly harassed, and now apparently the Secret Service has come up with some cockamamie excuse. Apparently, it's a threat to the president if you expose him trying to steal
the
vote.
Well, this is the new Patriot Act. Actually,
yeah, right.
There's some new provision in the Patriot Act.
See, the whole point of the USA Patriot Act is to hunt down the. See, they didn't really tell you. They never explained. It's to hunt down the patriots, like Bev
Harris,
and go after them. You know.
Yeah.
So I'll be. In fact, she'll be. There's a whole Best Democracy Money Can Buy wing at Guantanamo now. Bev and myself. She's in the new edition of my book.
That's great.
Great work. So, yeah, I mean, I'm horrified, but I'm not surprised that they're going after her.
Yeah.
So we got to get the word out there and scream and holler, and that's how I keep a lot of people I work with out of prison, by screaming and hollering.
There you go. Well, I'm doing that 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. I know you're out there doing that every single day from city to city all across America. Greg, thanks so much for being with us on the program today. Greg Palast, the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, new expanded election edition in bookstores near you. Thanks, Greg.
I'm your giant. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for participating. I appreciate having you on.
To the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The troqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob report.
Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
What is one of the most dangerous things you can do when you get seriously ill? Go to the hospital. Talk about catch-22. You're sick and you're told by your doctor to go to the hospital, but no one tells you the deadly little secret of today's hospitals. They kill. They kill because they have inadequate infection control practices. Patients going in for a particular problem often acquire infections from the hospital itself, often causing death. Lots of deaths. The Center for Disease Control reports that nearly 90,000 Americans a year die from these hospital infections. That's more than die from auto accidents and homicides combined. About 2 million patients a year catch infections from their hospitals, one of every 20 people who go in. What could be done? A huge step forward would be the simplest one, hand washing. Infections could be cut by more than half if there was an effective program for all medical personnel to wash their hands regularly, especially washing with alcohol hand rubs. Yet hospitals, apparently watching their bottom lines, don't have such a system in place, and none are required to put it in place. On the other hand, some hospitals do an excellent job of preventing infections. How are you to know the good from the bad? You can't. Believe it or not, there's no requirement that hospitals report or publicly disclose their infection rates so we patients can decide which is the best place for us. Luckily, some states are pushing mandatory disclosure laws. Unluckily, hospital lobbyists are pushing a bill in Congress that would preempt the ability of states to require this disclosure, instead setting up a voluntary federal program for reporting infection rates, and even these voluntary reports would be kept from the public. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is stupid. Consumers Union is fighting for full disclosure. Join them at StopHospitalInfections.org.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's a year now, well, since this over the weekend, since George Bush stood on the aircraft carrier and said, mission accomplished. It's worthwhile reviewing what's happened in that year, and for that matter, what happened a year ago, where we're at now, What might be the future of America and Iraq? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. Remember when President Bush and his spokesman lied about the Navy hanging the mission accomplished banner? Now, this is George W. Bush himself said, and I quote, "The mission accomplished sign was, of course, put up by the members of the USS Abraham Lincoln, saying that their mission was accomplished. I know it was attributed somehow to some ingenious advance man from my staff, but they weren't that ingenious, by the way." And then Scott McClellan said, "The banner was suggested by those on the ship. They asked us to do the production on the banner, and we did, but they're the ones who put it up." That reported in the New York Times. But then a little more of the story came out, and Bush's advanced staff, this from USA Today, did have a hand in the banner, said other military officials who asked not to be identified. The White House advance team then brought the banner to the ship and positioned it behind Bush. White House Communications Director Dan Bartlett confirmed some of those details. The White House Communications Office, well known for the carrot takes with the backdrops of Bush's speech, created the mission accomplished banner in the same style as banners the president uses in other appearances. It was all a lie. The White House brought the thing. The White House said, please put it up. A couple soldiers did put it up, or sailors did put it up. But that was the only part of it that was even remotely truthful. Remember when the White House lied about the ship being too far out for a helicopter landing, therefore he had to fly in on a jet? Another one? It's just this guy has a real problem with the truth, and it's let's hope it catches up with him. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Mark from Dallas is on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
How you doing today, Tom?
Great. What's up?
Hey, I appreciate your continuing to expose all the problems with employment. I'm an ex-professional at this point in time, unemployed 4 years, MBA, electrical engineering degree, yada, yada, yada. Can't find a job. And just to add insult to injury, a lot of people take the 308,000 jobs, net new jobs in March as a good sign. But if you actually look at the BLS numbers, Bureau of Labor Statistics, you find out that if you look at the number of people employed January 1st this year and subtract from it the number of people employed April 1st this year, we actually have 200,000 fewer working Americans in the first quarter of this year, despite the 308,000 increase in March.
What accounts for that?
Well, it just tells you that the American economy is continuing to contract, and at least for professionals like myself, I think that outsourcing is taking its toll.
Yeah, this doesn't even account for the fact that there's new employees coming into the labor force all the time. These are apples and apples. This is actual shrinkage of numbers.
Well, just to shift topics a little bit, but on the same thing, this Saturday, my representative Pete Sessions here in North Dallas is having an open house, and my question for him is going to be, well, if I can't find a job, why you deserve to get your job back in November?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And it's a good one.
Take
Mark,
care.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's, yeah. Yeah, our the economy is a little bit of a digression.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Independent radio has always been a powerful force for democracy in the United States, and independent web radio is carrying on in that proud tradition. RadioPower.org is an independent web radio station supported entirely by donations from its listeners. I encourage you to click on the donations link to help keep this important alternative voice on the air and on the Internet. Thanks.
When they're doing what they call the build-up type roofs, water from getting in.
Was that the stuff that caught on fire, or was it the engine and the truck, the cab?
Actually, I had a starter solenoid put on earlier that day, and the fire investigator feels pretty sure it was that caused the fire.
They screwed up.
Well, yeah, hopefully it's the manufacturer of the product and not the actual garage where I had it put on at.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to know that you're well and that you're safe. What's up? What'd you call about?
Yes. I'm in a 2005 KW, so I'm not really
not too shabby.
Truck, so I'm at home every night. That's great.
There you go.
But what I called is to quote something from The Matrix, and it basically says that freedom is, I don't know if I'm actually saying it's exactly right, but it's a paraphrase, not quoting it. It said that freedom is something that is it is an illusion that is created by people with power.
Hmm.
And I have seen how those people live, and I trust me, we are the working class people. We do not have any freedom. We do not have the freedom to be able to have the same, not even luxury, some of the necessities of life that the Constitution deemed every citizen should have.
Yeah, the pursuit of happiness. You know, there are two historic thinkers about this that I think are really important to share, because you raise a really important issue. Franklin Roosevelt, in a 1936 speech in July of 1936 in Philadelphia, made the comment that necessitous men are not free men. Now, necessitous is a word that isn't used much in these days. It was a big word in 1936. But basically it means people who are hungry, people who can't make ends meet, people who are struggling. And he said, necessitous men are not free men. And then you look at Abraham Maslow, the famous psychologist who died in 1974 and created what's often called Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. And Maslow said that the first needs that have to be fulfilled are the needs for physical safety. Audience, go ahead and look at my Vietnam War record. You won't find anything. Well, sure enough. Here we have now the ongoing flap. This is from Friday of last week. Once again, the president's prayer team sending out an email all across the country urging people to pray that the president seek wisdom as to how to legally codify the definition of marriage according to biblical principles. Quote, end quote. So, Congressman Jim McDermott, in a speech before the House of Representatives, said, well, with that in mind, I thought I would remind the body, this being Congress, he's speaking to the United States Congress, of the biblical principles they are talking about. He says, marriage shall consist of a union between one man and one woman. That's from Genesis 29:17. Secondly, marriage shall not impede a man's right to take concubines in addition to his wife or wives. That from 2 Samuel 5:13 and 2 Chronicles 11:21. Third, a marriage shall be considered valid only if the wife is a virgin. If she is not a virgin, she shall be executed. That from Deuteronomy 22:13. Fifth, marriage is a believer and a non-believer shall be forbidden. Genesis 24:3. And finally, McDermott says that there is, since there is no law that can change things, divorce is not possible. And if a married man dies, his brother is required by law to marry his sister-in-law. This from Genesis 38:6. And Deuteronomy 25:5. Let us return to biblical principles of marriage. Yes, indeed. Interesting. The conservative alert, as it were, for the day, ridiculing Senator Edward Kennedy for advocating that Congress raise the federal minimum wage. Mr. Limbaugh falsely claimed the minimum wage earners are overwhelmingly teenagers who don't have to support families. And April 29th, last week, he said, there aren't families living on the minimum wage anyway. It's a teenage entry-level job for 75% of the people earning minimum wage. Several minutes later, he said, the people that get the minimum wage are not the people Democrats portray them as being, heads of households supporting families of four. It's not the case. Let's get real. So we looked it up in the U.S. Census Bureau's data, 2000, most recent information. And the percentage of teens, Limbaugh says, percentage of teens earning the minimum wage is 75%, not heads of household. Turns out the percentage of minimum wage earners who are teens is 32%. All the rest are adults, many of them trying to raise families. And then the other... I shouldn't beat this horse, but, you know, saying that women who experience sexual harassment really want it, I mean, just a clip for you.
This thing, I mean, it was just in the gutter. Some of these babes, I'm telling you, like the sexual harassment crowd, they're out there protesting what they actually wish would happen to them sometime.
They're out there protesting what they wish would happen to them sometime. Yeah. So anyhow, Dick Cheney gave the commencement speech yesterday at Florida State University. Inspirational stuff. And I think it might provide us with some good insights to quickly review that. Before I do that, though, I want to get into this issue of the small pharmacies. Today is the first day that seniors who are eligible for Medicaid can get these discount cards. And all of a sudden, today, literally, small pharmacies, this was in the paper today, the Wall Street Journal, small pharmacies across America are discovering yet another gotcha in the Medicare bill. The Medicare bill is set up so that the discount cards that are in effect for 2 years are in effect, well, not just in effect, are going to drive small pharmacies out of business and only benefit those very large chain pharmacies. One more bone to toss to the Walmarts of the world from the Republican Party. I'll give you the details right after this break. It is truly shocking. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your call.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid.
has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Here's how it works. The Medicare prescription discount cards are being sold by the big drug companies who get to pocket the cost. You have to pay them a fee, an administrative fee. You get a card that maybe costs them 2 cents to print, and you pay them $25, $30, $40, whatever it is. And they get to keep that, and then they bear some of the discount that they pass along to the pharmacist. But a good chunk of this, and a chunk that, interestingly, was not mandated by law, but rather was kind of left up to the marketplace. And, of course, in a situation like we have here, this is not a real marketplace. This is a monopolistic, oligopolist. It is just not a marketplace. A monopolistic oligarchy. Yeah, there you go. Anyhow, here's the Wall Street Journal article by Janet Adamy. Small pharmacies say senior discounts threaten livelihood. We're talking about the survival of small pharmacies. Of course, that's, you know, survival of small pharmacies is not something that big fat cat corporate folks are interested in. This is small and medium-sized businesses. Yes, they made America great. They made America strong, but they don't contribute, by and large, to the Republican Party. In fact, they're probably more likely to be Democrats. Small businesses. The Medicare prescription cards, discount cards, become available today. This is from the Wall Street Journal. And go into effect next month. They're designed to relieve older Americans of higher drug costs. At the same time, the cards are placing a financial burden on another group, owners of independent pharmacies. They're required to pick up part of the cost of the card program. With narrow markups and a greater reliance on drug sales than their chain competitors, one-store pharmacies say the program will make it harder for them to turn a profit. It's the latest blow, the Wall Street Journal notes, to independent pharmacies. Do you know the number of independent pharmacies in the United States fell by just from 1993 to 2004, in a 10-year period, we went from over 27,000 to only 20,000. It fell by 5,620, actually, to 20,647 between 1993 and 2004. They're just being wiped out, just like independent businesses of all sorts. These big chain stores, the Walmarts, and all of their, you know, clones and competitors move in and eat the market. Just inhale it. Eat it whole. And what you're left with is the loss of middle-class jobs, the loss of money recirculating in the community. If you spend a dollar at a local business, and that local business puts that money into the local bank, and the local bank loans it out to another local business, and that dollar ends up being $1.70 over at the end of a month in terms of increased economic activity. If you spend a dollar at a big chain store, And at the end of the night, they push a button, and that money gets vacuumed out of that community and sucked off to Bentonville, Arkansas, or Chicago, Illinois, or New York City. That dollar may come back into the community as 8, 9, 10, 11 cents in terms of salaries and property taxes and whatnot. But it doesn't remain a dollar. It ultimately harms the local economy. And Donnie Calhoun, owner of Golden Springs Pharmacy in Anniston, Alabama, he says, I feel like we really just got the shaft in the whole deal. He estimates the program is going to lose him $125 a day once it takes effect. And the customers are going to have to wait longer for the prescriptions because he has additional costs administering the cards. Another pharmacist talked about how he hired three people just to handle a hassle factor. Craig Fuller, president and chief executive of the National Association of Chain Drugstores, says the nation's chains are enthusiastic. The big ones love it. The little ones, out of business.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of Troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The Troqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees, but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the Troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
you the way I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you?
And welcome back.
There's nothing in the world too good for a girl that's good and true.
Oh, yes. Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Dick Cheney's career is truly an inspiration, and therefore, Florida State University, no doubt at the suggestion of Jeb Bush, invited him to speak at the commencement yesterday. A few of the highlights from his career: when in doubt, privatize. This, by the way, is from the Tallahassee Democrat newspaper. Article by Mike Pope, who is the editor of the Letters to the Editor section. When in doubt, privatize. When Cheney was in charge of the Department of Defense, he decided much of the daily drudgery of military life could be privatized. So he funneled $3.9 million to a company called Halliburton to plan how it could prepare food, do laundry, and clean latrines. After he helped create a market for Halliburton, it got another $5 million to study it some more. When life hands you lemons, notes Mike Pope, make lemonade. When Bill Clinton won office in 1992, Cheney lost his job. His friends at Halliburton were more than happy to give him a job as CEO. In fact, by 2000, he was pulling in $36,086,635,000 from Halliburton. So what could anybody do that would be worth giving them $36,086,635. And, of course, he's continuing to receive about $170,000 a month. Plus, he continues to own several hundred thousand options, share options for Halliburton stock worth tens of millions of dollars. In 2000, George W. Bush put Cheney in charge of a team to select a running mate for George W. Cheney chose himself. Well, this is a great role model for the kids at the University of Tallahassee. Never let a conflict of interest get in the way of a good deal. Part one, notes Mike Pope. When Cheney met with his former colleagues to talk about the administration's energy policy, the war in Iraq was a major component. Remember this? The documents that have been pried out of the energy task force meetings by the lawsuit by Judicial Watch include a map of Iraq with the oil fields identified and a list of potential suitors, potential purchasers for Iraq's oil, companies all around the world. In the April 1991 energy meeting, task force meeting with Ken Lay and other good buddies from the energy industry. Part two, after we invaded Iraq, who better to clean up the mess than Halliburton? No bidding required, and who knows? After the Bush administration is out of power, Cheney might just be rehired by Halliburton. Maybe his buddies could kick his salary up to eight figures. Clearly he's earned it, right? Timing is everything, writes Mike Pope. The day after Halliburton was forced to admit the two of its employees had taken kickbacks, resulting in an overcharge of $6.3 million to the government, the Pentagon responded by giving Halliburton another contract. This one gives Halliburton $1.2 billion to rebuild Iraq's oil industry. Just because the vice president works for the people of the United States, knows Pope, doesn't mean that they need to know who he actually works with or what he's actually doing. When he dreamed up the 2001 Energy Task Force, Cheney's guiding principle was that the administration has the right to act as it pleases and that the public has no right to know what he's doing. Let's hear it for principles. Never let a conflict of interest get in the way of a good deal. Part three. Nobody knew who was on the 2001 Energy Task Force when the Sierra Club and Judicial Watch sued to get a hold of the list of participants. Cheney went on a duck hunting trip with Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. While killing ducks, the two may have discussed the pending case. Nevertheless, Scalia refused to recuse himself when the case went before the Supreme Court this week. Pope summarizes by saying, the graduating class of 2004 should be honored to hear from someone as inspiring as Vice President Dick Cheney, a man whose integrity and principles have made a lasting impression on this country. Now, you know, lest it sound like I'm just sitting around here complaining, let me share with you our Caught You Doing Something Right of the Week. This is absolutely great. Absolutely great. Our Caught You Doing Something Right goes to the Ford Motor Company. The Ford Motor Company. Indeed. They really deserve praise for this. You remember the Rouge Complex? The Rouge River is a river that runs through Detroit. Down into into one of the Great Lakes there. I forget which one. I think Erie, and it would regularly from the 1920s to the 1950s. You know, it was built in the early 20s by Henry Ford. It would regularly, the river would catch fire, and everything in it was dead. I mean, even just 5 years ago, the river was dead. This as a result of the Rouge Complex. It was, in fact, to quote a architect William McDonough, it was dead as a doornail. So what did they do? Ford has designed and built. It's finished. It's there. It's now there. They're in the fifth year of a $2 billion program. It's a 20-year effort to convert the aging, belching Rouge Complex into a flexible vehicle manufacturing facilities. And this is what they have done so far. And they're actually, the river is back. They've installed a 12,500-gallon cistern on the site that collects rainwater for outside irrigation and non-potable uses like flushing toilets in the new visitor center. They've put photosensory cells above the visitor center's main entry to capture sunlight and convert it into usable energy. The vertical landscape, a vertical landscape was added. This is, you know, using the side of the building, right? This, by the way, from an article by R.J. King and Eric Main in the Detroit News. A vertical landscape was added using trellises mounting on the sides of several buildings. The plants shade the buildings and provide natural insulation. More than 50% of the visitor center building materials are made of recycled content. A 10.4-acre living roof was built atop the truck plant. This roof is covered with grass. No, not that kind of grass. It's a drought-resistant perennial ground cover called sedum. Sedum can absorb up to 4 million gallons of rainwater annually. It also absorbs carbon dioxide and emits oxygen. The roof also provides insulation. It keeps the interior at least 10 degrees cooler in the summer, and it's expected to last 40 years. That's twice as long as a regular roof. Excess rain that the grass on the roof doesn't absorb is channeled through a natural irrigation system composed of filtering, rock beds, ground-level plantings, swales, porous pavement, retention ponds, and underground storage basins. They brought in 20,000 honeybees, 3 beehives, which are attracting birds, insects, and other small animals, and pollinating the plants in the area. They've planted 85,000 perennials, 20,000 shrubs, and hundreds of trees along the Rouge River and along Miller Road on the east side of the complex. The Wildlife Habitat Council has designated the Ford Rouge Center a wildlife habitat. And the result of this, the river is coming back. The river is coming back. It's just wonderful. Well done, Ford Motor Company. And may they be an example to many others. On the other side, here we have what the pictures that lost the war. The reality of this is not getting, frankly, we've seen the pictures on the evening news of the hostages, not the hostages, the prisoners in Iraq, in the Abu Ghraib prison. But the larger story, the whole story, is really very much not being told. And this from the Sunday Herald in Scotland, an article by Neil McKay, it's that tells you the story behind the story. And the reason why I think it's important for us as Americans to know about this is because this is how the rest of the world is perceiving us. And having George Bush just go on TV and say, you know, this disgusted me, that is not enough. And you'll understand why in a moment. McKay writes, it's an image that would do Saddam proud, a terrified prisoner, hooded and dressed in rags, his hands outstretched on either side of him, electrodes attached to his fingers and genitals. He's been forced to stand on a box about 1 foot square. His captors have told him that if he falls off the box, he'll be electrocuted. The torture victim was an Iraqi, and his torturers were American soldiers. The picture captures the moment when members of the coalition forces who styled themselves liberators were exposed as torturers. The image of the wired and hooded Iraqi was one of a series of photographs leaked by a horrified U.S. soldier inside Saddam's old punishment center, Abu Ghraib, now the U.S. POW camp. When the images were flashed around the world by America's CBS television network last Wednesday, there was a smug feeling within the U.K. that British troops would never behave like that. But on Friday night, the U.K. was treated to images, courtesy of the Daily Mirror, of British soldiers urinating on a blood-stained Iraqi captive, holding guns against the man's head, stamping on his face, kicking him in the mouth, and beating him in the groin with a rifle butt. The pictures of U.S. soldiers torturing their captives have the added horror of sexual abuse. In 5 of the 14 images that the Sunday Herald has seen, a female soldier, identified as Lindy England, a 21-year-old from West Virginia, is playing up to the camera while her captives are tortured. In one picture, she's smiling and giving the thumbs up. Her hand rests on the buttocks of a naked and hooded Iraqi who has been forced to sit on the shoulders of another Iraqi prisoner. In another, she's sprawled laughing over a pyramid of naked Iraqis. A male colleague stands behind her grinning. Later, she's got a cigarette clenched between grinning lips and is pointing at the genitals of a line of naked or hooded Iraqis. In other pictures, two naked Iraqis are forced to simulate oral sex, and a group of naked Iraqi men are made to clamber onto each other's backs. One dreadful picture features nothing but the bloated face of an Iraqi who has been beaten to death. His body is wrapped in plastic. Other pictures, which the world has not seen, but which are in the hands of the U.S. military, include shots of a dog attacking a prisoner. An accused soldier says the dogs were used for intimidation. There are also pictures of male rape. An Iraqi POW claims that a civilian translator hired to work in the prison raped a male child, a juvenile prisoner. He said they covered all the doors with sheets. I heard the screaming, and even the female soldier was taking pictures. The British pictures show a hooded Iraqi, aged between 18 and 20, on the floor with a military truck being brutalized. According to two squad mates who took part in the torture but later blew the whistle, his ordeal lasted 8 hours. He was left with a broken jaw and missing teeth, was bleeding and vomiting when his captors threw him out of the back of a speeding truck. Nobody knows if he lived or died. According to the British soldiers, the military police have found a video of prisoners being thrown from a bridge and a video of another prisoner being beaten to death in the custody of men from the Queen's Lancashire Regiment. And here's where it gets a little spooky. These soldiers weren't simply mavericks. Some accused claim they acted on the orders of military intelligence and the CIA, and that some of the torture sessions were under the control of mercenaries hired by the U.S. to conduct interrogations. Two civilian contract organizations taking part in interrogations at Abu Ghraib are linked to the Bush administration. California-based Titan Corporation says it is, quote, a leading provider of solutions and services for national security, end quote. Between 2003 and 2004, it gave nearly $40,000 to George W. Bush's Republican Party. This is a company that supplies translators to the military. CACI International, Inc. describes its aim as helping America's intelligence community in the war on terrorism. Richard Armitage, current U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, sat on its board of directors. These civilians from these private contractors, however, are not facing charges, as military law does not apply to them. What is going on? And then we've got, you know, on Hannity and Combs, they get this guy on, a former U.S. Army sergeant, Robinson, Tony Robinson. He says, well, one thing that needs to be understood is that there's also an impact on the torturer. Oh, we should have compassion for the renegades and the private contractors in our side who are, yes, we've, you know, it needs to be understood. There's also an impact on the torturer. He says, now I use the word torture, but that's not what's happening in these pictures. Hannity says, well, what is it? He says, well, I've seen worse than this at a frat hazing. Frat hazing is worse than this. Hannity asks him about it again. He says, well, it's not torture. If it was, they'd be accused of torture. They're accused of maltreatment. Yeah. So then Richard Myers goes on TV. You know, I just have to say, I am proud to be an American, and I love my country. And when the leadership of my nation lies us into a war and then allows it to be conducted, in fact, some would say encourages it to be conducted in ways that are extra legal, that are outside the bounds of legality. This being, I think, just one example, ranging from the privatization of functions that should be happening, that should be conducted by professionals in the military. I mean, here we've got, you know, the only people who have been indicted for the, I'm horrified. And I'm horrified because I love my country and I'm proud of my country and I want my country to have a reputation in the world that the rest of the world will point to us and say, that's how we want to be. And this is not that. This is a cancer that we have to remove. And the president's saying, well, I don't know. It's made me a little sick. It's just not enough. We've got to respond quickly, or this thing is absolutely going to spiral out of control because the entire Arab world is looking at us going, it's no different than Saddam.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A UN report lists a growing number of marine environments that are running low on oxygen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In many places around the world, coastal ecosystems are in trouble because pollution is robbing the water of oxygen. A recent report from the United Nations provides a list of almost 150 coastal environments that now suffer severe oxygen depletion. Robert Diaz is a marine biologist at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He wrote a study that was the basis for the UN report. He says the scientific name for the problem is hypoxia, and it received publicity for the first time back in the 1970s. That's when scientists started to document oxygen depletion in the Gulf of Mexico every spring. Diaz says once people started to look for hypoxia, they found it all over the place.
So it's really in the 80s when we see the identification of a lot of zones that had been hypoxic. But what we see in the 90s is the identification of new zones, zones that were not hypoxic in the 80s. So unfortunately, I think there is a real trend as an increase in the number of systems that are experiencing hypoxia for the first time.
Hypoxia gets started when water is polluted with excess nutrients, such as fertilizer. The UN says hypoxia could get worse in Asia and South America as farming becomes more dependent on fertilizer. Diaz agrees that it could be a serious problem.
It's in these other countries that up until this point haven't really been large users of fertilizers that we're going to see the biggest changes. And unfortunately, there'll be the worst kind of changes for the marine environment.
The report on hypoxia was part of a yearbook published this spring by the UN Environment Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to share with you the thoughts of Richard Holbrooke. You know, Richard Holbrooke was the United States ambassador to the United Nations during the Clinton administration. And a distinguished and thoughtful guy. And he was talking with Victoria Jones the other day with cable, with the Talk Radio Network. And they provided us with this clip, which I think is really, you know, with his, even his opening caveat is thoughtful. It's just a short piece, but it's well said. I just wanted to share it.
It's a very difficult thing.
And it's going to take, hang on, just a second here. And push the right button, and then it'll work. There we go.
It's a very difficult thing to talk about our situation when Americans are facing death and wounds on every minute out there. But we must be honest. We are in worse shape today in Iraq than we were 12 months ago today. Americans are dying at a higher rate. 12 months ago, you could travel freely in most of Iraq and be greeted with joy as a liberator. Today, there's no safe ground in most of Iraq. Even the north, the Kurdish area, has deteriorated. And in this circumstance, with the situation continually deteriorating, the Americans are now being forced to rush tanks and heavy equipment back to Iraq, reinforcing our troops, effectively raising our troop strength by delaying returns. We have to be honest about this, Victoria. It is very bad news. It's the most serious crisis we've faced since Vietnam.
It's, yeah. And this now is the situation that we have to decide, you know, what are we going to do with this thing? Yeah, Bush broke it. You know, he came into office deciding that he wanted to attack Iraq, you know, avenge daddy's war, show daddy that he could do something he couldn't do, help him become the wartime president, get himself reelected, you know, learn the mistakes of his father. There is all that oil over there, after all, another good reason. Stabilize the Middle East, protect Israel. I mean, there's a whole long list of reasons. As Wolfie said to Vanity Fair, but we chose weapons of mass destruction because it was the easiest to sell. Anyhow, as Colin Powell would say, he broke it, we own it. What are we going to do with it? George Bush has created a terrible, terrible, frightening, terrible mess that is causing the deaths of our young men and women. We need new leadership. We need somebody coming in, John Kerry, I would think, ideally, somebody coming in and saying to the world, it's not him, it's somebody else here leading this country. We're going to take it in a different direction. This is Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of Troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The Troqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees, but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the Troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
What is one of the most dangerous things you can do when you get seriously ill? Go to the hospital. Talk about catch-22. You're sick and you're told by your doctor to go to the hospital, but no one tells you the deadly little secret of today's hospitals. They kill. They kill because they have inadequate infection control practices. Patients going in for a particular problem often acquire infections from the hospital itself, often causing death. Lots of deaths. The Center for Disease Control reports that nearly 90,000 Americans a year die from these hospital infections. That's more than die from auto accidents and homicides combined. About 2 million patients a year catch infections from their hospitals, one of every 20 people who go in. What could be done? A huge step forward would be the simplest one, hand washing. Infections could be cut by more than half if there was an effective program for all medical personnel to wash their hands regularly, especially washing with alcohol hand rubs. Yet hospitals, apparently watching their bottom lines, don't have such a system in place, and none are required to put it in place. On the other hand, some hospitals do an excellent job of preventing infections. How are you to know the good from the bad? You can't. Believe it or not, there's no requirement that hospitals report or publicly disclose their infection rates so we patients can decide which is the best place for us. Luckily, some states are pushing mandatory disclosure laws. Unluckily, hospital lobbyists are pushing a bill in Congress that would preempt the ability of states to require this disclosure, instead setting up a voluntary federal program for reporting infection rates, and even these voluntary reports would be kept from the public. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is stupid. Consumers Union is fighting for full disclosure. Join them at StopHospitalInfections.org.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. And what are we going to do now with this Iraqi general? Here we've got General Jassim Mohammed Saleh, or Saleh, and we put him in charge. He was a general in Saddam's Republican Guard, the elite military corps that swore eternal loyalty to Saddam. He's the one who led his forces into Fallujah, where he and his Iraqi soldiers were greeted as liberators. I guess somebody ultimately was. And now the Marines are saying, well, wait a minute. The U.S. commander said that Saleh has agreed to go after the purported foreign fighters in Fallujah, but he has announced that there's none there. So here we've got, this is a terrible problem. This whole thing started. It's sort of this. There's really two elements to this. One is three elements. One is how we're perceived around the world, and in particular within the Arab world. And in terms of are we weak? Are we strong? Are we fair? Are we brutal? You know, those kinds of things. The second is what is going on with this guy? I mean, is it possible that he can have loyalty to us? I mean, there's very strong arguments for keeping the army. This whole idea that Rumsfeld had to dissolve the army, which apparently was Wolfowitz's idea, was nuts. I mean, armies by and large, professional armies, not conscripted armies, but professional armies, particularly at the higher ranks. And you get above captain, or certainly above lieutenant, and you've got people who are looking at it as a career. They love their country. They are committed to their country. They have loyalty and patriotism, but it also for them is a career. And to dissolve the army and think that you could take that extraordinary level of knowledge that's out there and simply replace it by just grabbing people off the street, I mean, it was crazy. So we went back and we got this guy, this professional army guy, and said, okay, we're going to send you in there, and you please pacify the city. Well, all he had to do was walk in, and everybody said, hey, it's an Iraqi. And suddenly the fighting stopped. And then we said to him, and then we've got this kind of testosterone problem of we've got these four Halliburton employees. I believe they were Halliburton. These four contractors. Maybe they're one of the security firms. These four contractors who were murdered and their bodies were desecrated. We saw all the pictures of the little kids, teenage boys and whatnot, dancing in the streets. And are we going to do the manly thing and extract revenge? Well, we've already killed 600 civilians in Fallujah and several hundred people who were fighting against us, according to the Iraqi hospital reports. Is that enough revenge for the four guys who died? Apparently not. We want justice as well. We want to know who were the guys, who were the people who killed these four? Let's put them on trial. And who are the people who are shooting at our soldiers? Let's put them on trial. So this general goes in. Brigadier General Jassim Mohammed Saleh, a one-star general. And he takes over Fallujah. And now we're hearing from the civilian, from the Pentagon, well, maybe this guy won't pass muster. Maybe if we vet him, we'll discover that he's not somebody that we would want in charge of the military. Maybe he was too loyal to Saddam. Maybe he was too close to the old regime. And to further that conspiracy theory, as it were, they told him, okay, you go into the city, you take the city, and please bring out to us those foreign fighters that are in there, those Al-Qaeda people that are in there, those people who snuck in there from Iran and Saudi Arabia, and those nasty people who are shooting at us, bring them out. And he says, I'm sorry, there aren't any here. I have looked all through the city. There's nobody here who is shooting at you. And so now, the Pentagon is saying, let's get this guy out of here. And a military official, one of the people on the ground, one of the people who actually has to deal with the situation, says, we've just told him he can form a brigade and take over the city, and now we're telling him he has to step aside? I don't think so. This is the kind of, it's like a bad Three Stooges movie, where everybody's running around going, whoop, 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 whoop. And bouncing off walls. And then we find out on top of this that back in February, now this is May, back in February, Major General Antonio Antonio M. Taguba completed a 53-page report that he sent to the Pentagon documenting abuse at the prison and what should be done about it.
in February. Oh, but our administration is just so surprised by this. Just shocked, shocked. I'm shocked that there's gambling going on at Rick's Bar.
1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. We've got a Chalabi alert here, too. Ahmed Chalabi is up to some new old tricks. This guy, you know, if the Bush administration wants to characterize itself as victims, then they could do no better than to blame this thing on Chalabi. I mean, they've tried blaming it on the CIA, they've tried blaming it on the NSA, they've tried blaming it on everybody except, of course, themselves, overlooking the fact that Dick Cheney in 1998, not to mention Wolfowitz and Jeb Bush, signed the letter from the New American Century, the Project for New American Century, in 1998, signed a letter to President Clinton telling him to attack Iraq. Dick Cheney signed it. But Chalabi is the guy who was feeding them all the so-called intelligence. And I got a Chalabi alert here for you in just a second. It's going to curl your hair. 1-866-889-8894. First, let's take a call from Natalie in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Hey, Natalie, how'd your bake sale go?
Oh, thanks, Tom. Thanks for letting me make my announcement last Friday. We were very successful. And thanks to you, we had some people who came and seeked out our booth because they heard the announcement on Friday.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
And so I want to thank those people, too, that came by to support us. So we had, I think we sold about $1,300, $1,400.
Wow.
And so that's going to go to moveon.org.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And I wanted to thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, thanks for doing it. I mean, that's what you're doing is the on-the-ground stuff that all of us all across America need to be doing in all of our various different ways. I mean, everybody has their own way that they can contribute. Some people, it's just voting. Most people, it's telling other people about things, you know, supporting programs like this. I mean, there's all kinds of programming out there now. Liberal programming is supporting the sponsors, and in some cases, doing things like your bake sale that you did there in Los Alamos. I think
it all makes a difference.
It does. It really does. Even if the difference isn't immediately obvious, it all makes a difference. The anti-slavery movement in the United States started in the 1600s. The woman's suffrage movement in the United States started in the early 1700s. Sometimes it takes a while. But,
sure.
But you know, things do happen because people of conscience take a stand. Well done.
Right, these were all contributions for, you know, 25 cents, a dollar. Some people bought more expensive things, but mostly they were just 25 cents, 50 cents. And we ended up with over $1,000. So
that's wonderful.
It was a great success.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot. It is just absolutely marvelous. Okay, here's our Chalabi report. Newsweek reports. This is Newsweek has this story. Newsweek reports. Longtime Pentagon favorite to become leader of a free Iraq, Ahmed Chalabi, has never made a secret of his close ties to Iran. To what? Iran is part of the Axis of Evil. He's never made a secret of those ties may have deadly repercussions for U.S. troops, however. Top Bush administration officials have been briefed on intelligence indicating that Chalabi and some of his top aides have been supplying Iran with sensitive information on the American occupation of Iraq. According to officials, quote, electronic intercepts of discussions between Iranian leaders indicate that Chalabi and his entourage told Iranian contacts about American political plans in Iraq. See, this guy, he will use anybody to further his own purposes, his own career, his own wealth, his own power. There are also indications that Chalabi, I'm still quoting from this document, there are also indications that Chalabi has provided details of U.S. security operations. According to one U.S. government source, some of the information Chalabi turned over to Iran could get people killed, end quote. Chalabi, an Iraqi exile whose good buddies of Paul Wolfowitz and Doug Feith,
the Deputy Secretary of Defense and Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, has his own agenda and, according to Newsweek, may be working both sides in an effort to solidify his own power and block the advancement of rival Iraqis. This is the guy, you remember a couple of days ago, I told you, he said that he is not going to allow America to decide who is going to run Iraq. Now that America has decided that he's going to run Iraq. Amazing. 1-866-889-8894. Holly in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Holly, welcome to the program. Holly? Yep. Apparently, Holly is gone. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. The whole issue of civil liberty, well, actually, here's another one. This just a quickie. Anti-war equals racist? Get this. George Bush recently said there's a lot of people in the world who don't believe that people whose skin color may not be the same as ours can be free and self-govern. I believe those people whose skins aren't necessarily or are a different color than white can self-govern. Who? Who is saying that people who don't have white skins can't self-govern? I mean, this is like, you know, and then Bush says this, McClellan repeats it, and it implies that his political opponents or something, you know, who is saying this? I don't know anybody who say. I mean, all you have to do is look at South Africa. I mean, it's a, yeah. It's, this is the old straw man argument. There's only two sides of every issue. Our way or the highway. Our way or the wrong way. It's outrageous. If you are anti-war, you must be racist, says George and Scott. It's the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer.
Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent, progressive radio network that is entirely funded by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive, and I have a very special announcement to make. A private individual who wishes to remain anonymous has offered to match dollar for dollar every donation that we bring in. That means that if you make a $20 donation, we will get a $40 total donation. If you make a $50 donation, we will get a total $100 donation. And if you make a $100 donation today, we will get a total of $200 donated to our network. This is an extraordinary opportunity that I'm asking you to help us take advantage of today. If you listen to our radio programs on a daily basis, then you know the quality of programming that we bring you can be found nowhere else. Tom Hartman, Mark Levine, Tony Trupiano, Peter Werby are just a few of the big names, the heavy hitters in progressive talk radio that we bring you on a daily basis. The amount of bandwidth that we consume bringing you these live talk shows is tremendous, and bandwidth is not cheap. And that consumes the majority of our operating expenses. On top of that, we have to pay syndication fees, and we have to have administration costs also. And in order to bring you a lineup of such great progressive talk radio programs, all that we ask is that you pledge a donation right now. I'm asking you to stop whatever you're doing and take 5 minutes and go to radiopower.org and pledge a donation today. You can pledge a donation via any major credit card, or you can pledge a donation using an electronic check from your bank. This can all be done right off of our website. It's all secure. It'll take 5 minutes. That's it. So, again, our website is radiopower.org, and click on the donations link. And for every dollar that you donate, we will get a matching fund, dollar for dollar. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you. for listening to Radio Power.
Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And they look at you like they don't speak your language. And you're living at the bottom of a well. And you swallowed all their awful, blooded secrets that you can't tell.
And welcome back to Tom Hartman Radio Program, 25 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Holly is back with us again. Holly, apparently you got disconnected.
I grabbed the phone and hung up on myself.
The whole!
I'm back. Okay. Well, we got the latest letter from the Democratic National Committee today, or we opened it today, asking us to contribute to John Kerry and other Democratic candidates, and it's a long... It's a long two-page letter and with headings of all the areas of concern, mm-hmm. including jobs, health care, education, environment, and civil rights. There is not one mention of the war.
Yeah.
There is not one mention of terrorism. There's not one mention of the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And I'm real curious about who composed this letter and what John Kerry thinks he's doing. This is the reason why our... The little bit that we can contribute is going to continue to go to Dennis Kucinich at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully Dennis can move the agenda. My take on what's going on here is that is twofold. One is that they're trying to play it safe. John Kerry. The only reason that John Kerry right now is the nominee rather than Dick Gephardt or Howard Dean is that Kerry stayed out of the fight in Iowa. And Dean was being beat up by the Club for Growth. They came in and spent $10 million on those ads to smash him. And then he went after Gephardt. Gephardt went after him. They ended up bloodying each other. And everybody looked around and said, well, these guys are bums. Who's left? And it was John Kerry. And so I think that there's some part of him or his strategy that figures if I can just kind of stay out of the way of everything, and things go really bad, people will say, well, you know, who's left? Well, okay, here's Kerry. Let's vote for him, number one. Number two, I think that the lessons of Vietnam were not lost on John Kerry. And one of the big lessons of Vietnam was that it was fine to support support withdrawal from Vietnam and be opposed to the war after the war was over. In retrospect, everybody looked back and said, yeah, George McGovern was right. But when... soldiers are in combat fighting and dying, and a national leader takes a position that is perceived by Americans as being, by some Americans, as giving aid and comfort to the enemy. You know, this is just going to encourage. See, the attack that the right will roll out if John Kerry says anything about Iraq other than we need to stay the course, is they will say he is giving encouragement to those rebels that are killing our young men and women, and they're going to blame him for every single death. And you're going to have the entire right-wing talk machine doing a Ted Koppel and every day reading the names of the people who died because John Kerry said that we shouldn't be there, and it encouraged the insurgents. And there actually may even be some small amount of truth to that, but the larger issue that, you know, that, that it would encourage them. But the larger issue is, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, should we be there in the first place? Should we be there even one more day? I don't think so. But for him to say that right now, I think would just be political suicide, and that's why it's not in that letter.
Well, thank you for that astute response.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I'm still going to vote for him, and I wish he could speak out. But I just, you know, I mean, I've, you know, we lived through the Vietnam War. I was out there, you know. Well, we don't need to go into all that. But anyhow, McGovern just committed political suicide with that thing, and I don't think Kerry's going to follow that path. And
but McGovern was a voice that helped to bring that war to a close.
Well, yes and no. I mean, LBJ was talking about ending the war. Nixon had a secret plan to end the war. Everybody knew the war was going to end, and it was Gerry Ford who ended the war, really. I mean, you could say McGovern did. I would say that it was the fact that the war itself was failing. Just like people say, you know, Ronald Reagan brought down the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union fell because it rotted within. The war in Vietnam ended because everybody in the military realized there was no possible way to win it. And, you know, McGovern was a voice, but I wouldn't give him that much credit, frankly. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I don't think so. Anyhow, Holly, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A week of traffic snarling protests around California by independent truck drivers climaxed on Friday with major jams around Los Angeles and several arrests. At the beginning of last week, the truckers, who are overwhelmingly Latino and call themselves Troqueros, focused protests in the Stockton area, slowing traffic at that port to a trickle. But on Friday, dozens of Troqueros rolled into L.A., and during the morning rush, they traveled the I-5 artery at 5 miles an hour. Others parked their big rigs across freeways and were arrested in the process. Traffic to the busy port of Long Beach was hardest hit. It cleared less than 10% of a normal day's cargo. A similar but smaller action took place Friday in Oakland. The Troqueros say haulage rates have actually decreased over the last decade. This, coupled with soaring diesel prices, has slashed their incomes by half or more. The situation's made worse by the fact that the shipping companies they work for classify them not as employees, but independent contractors, which disqualifies them from volume discounts on fuel. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters issued a statement supporting the protest, even though by and large it did not participate. The California Truckers Association, which represents the state's trucking companies, criticized the Troqueros for being so disruptive.
Members of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Teaching Assistants Association gave state officials a failing grade for stalling contract negotiations for more than 10 months. Last week, 500 TAs shut down classes with an illegal two-day strike. TAA members are resisting the state's attempts to increase their health care costs and are threatening to withhold UW-Madison students' grades unless a fair deal is reached soon.
The Winn-Dixie grocery chain announces it will conduct a major restructuring that will result in 10,000 layoffs, a 10% cut to the company's workforce, and the closure of more than 150 stores. The chain, which has its heaviest presence east of the Mississippi River, cites competition from Walmart for its dire financial straits. And there are ties between the two companies. No other grocery chain has as much overlap geographically with Walmart stores as Winn-Dixie, and Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, once served on Winn-Dixie's board of directors. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Did you know that all voters, the Gehring Hart Yang Research Group, just did a fascinating study. Pretty good size, sample large enough that they could say that it was plus or minus 3 percentage points in terms of accuracy. And what they found was that 36% of all Americans, all American voters, this is a study of voters, 36% of all American voters believe that liberals dominate the media. 24% are not sure. But the percentage of voters who believe that conservatives dominate the media is 41%. Among independents, it goes up to 43%. Only 29% of independents believe that the liberals dominate the media. Americans who spend the most time, more than 20 hours a week, using the media to get news and information about government and politics at the national level are the most likely to point to conservative media dominance. But 46 to 31%, they say conservatives have more power and influence in the media today. I guess they have been paying attention. Overall, 47% say that the news media, including newspapers, evening news programs on ABC, CBS, NBC, and cable news, have not done enough to examine the Bush administration's record. Only 18% say the media have gone too far in examining the administration's record. Isn't this interesting? Among voters who believe that conservatives have the most power and influence over the media today, fully 60% say that the news media have not examined the administration's record thoroughly enough. By comparison, only 32% of those who believe that liberals dominate the media feel the news organizations have not gone far enough. We are very much becoming a very, very polarized nation. What I wonder, and I'm not a scholar of this. I'm just an observer. But I really wonder to what extent this polarization is a new and unique phenomena, or if it's just, you know, it's always kind of been that way. Is it is just the way it's always been? I don't know. It's, you know, do we see cycles of it? That's my guess. Is that there are cycles where for a while it gets very intense. It was very intense during the Roosevelt administration, for example. Republicans hated Roosevelt. I mean, absolutely, just viscerally hated it. There was an attempt to an attempted coup of Roosevelt, the General Smedley Butler identified. And then I think it kind of died down after World War II and Harry Truman, and then Dwight Eisenhower comes in. And I think during the Eisenhower administration and even probably during the Kennedy administration, the difference, the vitriol, wasn't as substantial. And then with Nixon, it cranked back up again. And I think with Carter, it kind of calmed down again. Maybe it's the president. Maybe it's the guy at the top, you know, setting the tone. I don't know. It's interesting. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, you got a Rush joke?
Yeah, I got a Rush and a right-wing joke.
Okay, cool.
What does it sound like when Rush Limbaugh and the right wing all together get their breakfast medication ready?
I don't know. What does it sound like? Okay. Good one. Good one, Armin. Thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call and thanks for sharing that with us. Me. I am tempted to play one of our Rush clips, but it's Here, this is something that concerns me. I want to go off on a bit of a screed here. And what is the cause of this? The United States is losing its dominance in the sciences. And this, I mean, are we becoming a banana republic? Are we becoming a third world country? This is spooky. Now, here's the apparent cause. And this, the Center for American Progress points this out. In a report last month, this is from the New York Times. In a report last month, the American Association for the Advancement of Science said the Bush administration, to live up to its pledge to have the nation's budget deficit the next 5 years, would cut research financing at 21 of 24 federal agencies. All those that do or finance science, except those involved in space and national and domestic security. These cuts, the center points out, threaten to further deplete scientific resources just as the United States has started to lose its worldwide dominance in critical areas of science and innovation. Okay, so they point that out, that it's about money. I don't think it's just about money. I just don't think that's it. I have the New York Times article here in front of me. William J. Broad wrote, "The U.S. is losing its dominance in the science." They quote John Jankowski, a senior analyst of the National Science Foundation, says science excellence is no longer the domain of just the U.S. And they talk about how the fact that there are, you know, new developments being made around the world, but profits from the breakthroughs are likely to stay overseas. They point out, I thought that was an interesting phrase. One area of international competition involves patents. Over the last decade, we only produced 52% of industrial patents. It used to be very high. It used to be 80, 90%, something like that. Very, very high. A more concrete decline can be seen in published research. Physical Review, a series of top physics journals, recently tracked a reversal in which American papers in 2 decades, basically since the Reagan administration, fell from the most to the least. Before Reagan became president, we published the majority of scientific papers around the world. Now we publish the minority. We are beat now by Britain, Japan, Russia, Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, and New Zealand. Traditionally, the United States, powered by heavy federal investments in basic research, the kind that pursues fundamental questions of nature, dominates Nobel Prize awards. We're not getting those anymore either. We no longer dominate the Nobel Prizes. Europe is building a particle physics generator, a giant atom smasher. It's going to be finished in 2007, 17-mile circular tunnel contraption. And we're just kind of backing out. Now, here's another theory. Jack Fitz, a senior officer of the National Academy of Engineering, says it's all in the ebb and flow of globalization. He says we're just going to have to adjust. Just going to have to adjust. It's about globalization. Well, you know, yeah, then the conservative agenda may have something to do with it. Offshoring research, our research companies moving to countries where labor is cheaper and schools are still good, like India. The Grover Norquist variety of conservative agenda of don't tax millionaires and billionaires. Just cut back on things like federal funding of science. After all, we don't need no stinking science. That may have something to do with it. Now, the Republican Party responds by saying that federal research budgets are at record highs. This year, we're going to spend $126 billion on research. That's an enormous amount of money. However, $66 billion of that, more than half of that, is for military research. So it's really not the kind of thing that's going to produce Nobel Prizes. It's not the kind of, it may produce fancier bombs. So what's really going on? I would suggest to you that we are seeing not only the economic situation in the United States changing, not only the priorities of government, not only the tax priorities, not only the profit priorities of corporations moving their operations overseas and whatnot, all of those things are happening. But I'd say there's another thing in the United States, and that is that since the Reagan administration, since the unholy alliance was formed in the Republican Party, that interestingly got George Herbert Walker Bush elected president. I don't know if you saw the Frontline report on PBS last Friday or last Thursday. It was really quite extraordinary about George W. Bush and born-again Christianity. That since this unholy alliance between religious fundamentalists, principally Christian fundamentalists, and the Republican Party was forged, it has become fashionable to bash science in both government and in the Republican Party. In fact, it goes so far as we're seeing things like Dinosaur Adventure Land. This is a new Florida attraction. Don't take your kids to Disney World. Take them instead to Dinosaur Adventure Land. What is it? It's a place where you will, quote, find out the truth about dinosaurs. It's run by a minister, Kevin Hovind. He opened the park in 2001 to spread the message of creationism, which now is taking many other guises. This thing of intelligent design and skeptical inquiry. And Mr. Hovind, this is the New York Times notes, an article by Abby Goodnow, Darwin Free Fund for Creationists, yesterday's paper. Mr. Hovind, a former public school science teacher with his own ministry, Creation Science Evangelism, said he opened a Dinosaur Adventure Land to counter all the science centers and natural history museums that explain the evolution of life with Darwinian theory. Now, this is really interesting because, there are scientists who are bashing Darwin, too. The first one, and probably the most famous, and the one who's been largely accepted, Darwin's theories now are being considered, quaint, because of the work of Stephen Jay Gould, the Harvard biologist who died just a few years ago. Stephen Jay Gould in 1987 or 78, I mix those years up. I believe it was 1987, published a paper in which he suggested that Darwin's theory that evolution happens slowly over long periods of time didn't make any sense. And the evidence of it was the same evidence that the creationists were using, and that is that you can't find fossils of the transition species. If species take a long time to slowly evolve from one to the other, where are all these transition species? They don't exist. The creationists say, therefore, there's no such thing as evolution. Gould says, and this is now pretty much the state of the art of science, Gould says, no, there's this thing called punctuated evolution. Evolution works in fits and starts. You have these things called bottlenecks. And the classic example that everybody is familiar with is where you've got a bacteria that you're trying to kill off with an antibiotic, and say 0.1% of the individual bacterium have a gene mutation that allows them to ignore a particular antibiotic. So you toss in that antibiotic, and 99.9% of the bacteria get killed off. And the person says, oh, I'm well now, and they stop taking the antibiotic, or the animal. Consider the fact that between half and two-thirds of all antibiotics manufactured and distributed in the United States are actually given to animals, not to people. That's the great sea, the great petri dish in which antibiotic-resistant bacteria is fermenting, although for some reason they don't talk about that much on TV and in the mainstream media. But anyhow, the person thinks they're well, they stop taking the antibiotic, and that 0.1% that is antibiotic resistant says, hey, and they start growing. And now you've got a super infection. You've got a brand new bacteria that is resistant to the antibiotic. Well, that moment when 99.9% of the bacteria were killed off, that is what Stephen Jay Gould refers to as a bottleneck. And what Gould suggests is that throughout the history, the 5-6 billion year history of this planet, there have been millions of bottlenecks. Times when species were overwhelmed by disease, by changes in climate, by meteorites hitting the earth, by, you know, whatever it may be, and 90, 95%, 98%, 99% of a population gets killed off. And the only ones that survive are the ones that carry a mutation that allows them to survive in this new environment. This is called punctuated equilibrium, or punctuated evolution, or both. And he says, this is how it works. But, you know, the creationists are not acknowledging Gould's theory. They're saying, well, you know, we don't need theories. We know that the world came into being 6,000 years ago because it says so in the Bible. Now, having read the Bible, I can tell you the Bible doesn't say that the world came into being 6,000 years ago. This is the interpretation of one relatively small group of Christians. Well, large enough in the United States to swing a presidential election, but, you know, on the worldwide stage, relatively small. Anyhow, they're here at the Dinosaur Adventure Land. They have dinosaur bone replicas with accompanying explanations that God made dinosaurs on day six of the creation, as described in Genesis 6,000 years ago. Among the products that the park gift shop peddles are T-shirts with a small fish labeled Darwin getting gobbled by a bigger fish labeled Truth. A Kentucky creationist group called Answers in Genesis said it is building a 100,000-square-foot complex outside Cincinnati with a museum, classrooms, a planetarium, and a special effects theater where moviegoers can experience the flood and other events described in Genesis. This is, you know, we have college or high school textbooks now that are presenting creation, you know, presenting evolution as a theory that should be considered along with creationism, and we wonder why we are falling behind the world in science.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then
Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent, progressive radio network that is entirely funded by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive, and I have a very special announcement to make. A private individual who wishes to remain anonymous has offered to match dollar for dollar every donation that we bring in. That means that if you make a $20 donation, we will get a $40 total donation. If you make a $50 donation, we will get a total $100 donation. And if you make a $100 donation today, we will get a total of $200 donated to our network. This is an extraordinary opportunity that I'm asking you to help us take advantage of today. If you listen to our radio programs on a daily basis, then you know the quality of programming that we bring you can be found nowhere else. Tom Hartman, Mark Levine, Tony Trupiano, Peter Werby are just a few of the big names, the heavy hitters in progressive talk radio that we bring you on a daily basis. The amount of bandwidth that we consume bringing you these live talk shows is tremendous, and bandwidth is not cheap. And that consumes the majority of our operating expenses. On top of that, we have to pay syndication fees, and we have to have administration costs also. And in order to bring you a lineup of such great progressive talk radio programs, all that we ask is that you pledge a donation right now. I'm asking you to stop whatever you're doing and take 5 minutes and go to radiopower.org and pledge a donation today. You can pledge a donation via any major credit card, or you can pledge a donation using an electronic check from your bank. This can all be done right off of our website. It's all secure. It'll take 5 minutes. That's it. So, again, our website is radiopower.org, and click on the donations link. And for every dollar that you donate, we will get a matching fund, dollar for dollar. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you for listening to Radio Power.
A UN report lists a growing number of marine environments that are running low on oxygen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In many places around the world, coastal ecosystems are in trouble because pollution is robbing the water of oxygen. A recent report from the United Nations provides a list of almost 150 coastal environments that now suffer severe oxygen depletion. Robert Diaz is a marine biologist at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He wrote a study that was the basis for the UN report. He says the scientific name for the problem is hypoxia, and it received publicity for the first time back in the 1970s. That's when scientists started to document oxygen depletion in the Gulf of Mexico every spring. Diaz says once people started to look for hypoxia, they found it all over the place.
So it's really in the 80s when we see the identification of a lot of zones that had been hypoxic. But what we see in the 90s is the identification of new zones, zones that were not hypoxic in the 80s. So unfortunately, I think there is a real trend as an increase in the number of systems that are experiencing hypoxia for the first time.
Hypoxia gets started when water is polluted with excess nutrients, such as fertilizer. The UN says hypoxia could get worse in Asia and South America as farming becomes more dependent on fertilizer. Diaz agrees that it could be a serious problem.
It's in these other countries that up until this point haven't really been large users of fertilizers that we're going to see the biggest changes. And unfortunately, there'll be the worst kind of changes for the marine environment.
The report on hypoxia was part of a yearbook published this spring by the UN Environment Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. We've got about 2.5-3 minutes here before the end of the show today, and I've got a couple of calls here. Let's just get right to them. Number 12 in Santa Fe. Hey, number.
Yeah.
What's up?
I've been listening to the show for a while, and I call a bunch of other places, and I can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. When people talk about allegedly polar opposite issues or polar opposite stances, I really think there's, because I can listen to right-wing radio and agree with a lot of it. I can listen to left-wing radio and agree with a lot of it. So there's got to be something else going on here. And my theory is that there is a power base or a group of people or whatever you want to call it or entities that would benefit from Republicans and Democrats hating each other or creationists and evolutionists hating each other, because basically, you know, evolutionists have a lot of stuff to say that seems pretty right, and creationists have a lot of stuff to say that seems pretty right, and the Democrats and the Republicans, when you set the seesaw type of system, it's a divide and conquer strategy.
Sure.
It's just like a,
you know who's making money from it? The media.
Well, the media, sure, and basically, there's another one because...
And then the politicians make money from it, too, because the more they can whip people up, the more they can get people infuriated, either for them or against them, the more they're going to get people in their pockets. That's that, you know.
My theory that will, you know, like, the answer to the joke, here's the joke, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is the rooster. Because you cannot have a two-dimensional question in a three-dimensional reality.
There you go.
That being the case, is the media liberal or is the media conservative? It's both, because basically I would say that the upper echelon that own the media are probably overwhelmingly conservative. Yet, I would say the vast majority of journalists tend to be idealistic and liberal.
Yeah.
So basically you have this...
I absolutely agree with you. I got to move along, you're spot on right. Good point. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Number 12, I appreciate it. Chris in New Mexico, you're on the air.
Yeah, really briefly, good to talk to you, Tom. In your talk about returning the bath party to Fallujah, as we've done, something you didn't mention or think you missed was the Shia population is simply appalled and angered. You know, Saddam's generals are once more gaining legitimacy, and we're handing it to them.
Yeah, and they're lashing out at us. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. John in Santa Fe, you'll have the last word.
Yeah, briefly, Tom. Kerry is risking energizing Nader's campaign by playing it so safe on the war.
I agree.
If he picks Gephardt as the vice president, that will really energize Nader's campaign.
Yeah, we live in interesting times, John. We'll see how it plays out. Thanks for the call. Thanks to Louise for producing the show. Thanks to Rama Schneider for sitting in today, helping engineer the program. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. The RadioPower.org and White Rose Society and Michael Toth for our archives and our web stream. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.